Seahawks fans, wherever you may be, welcome inside the Hawks Playbook Podcast. Join your host, Bill Albstadt, and featuring 12thmanrising.com editor and football analyst, Keith Myers. Hello, and welcome again into the Hawks Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Albstadt, and I am here again with Keith Myers, the editor and chief football writer for 12thmanrising.com. Hi, Keith.
Hey, Bill. How's it going?
It's going good. Well, here we are in getting close to the first part of spring, and we're now just coming out of the combine. We're right in the heart of the first couple of days in free agency, and so we do have quite a bit to talk about today. But first, I wanted to get into just a couple of news items, and we'll talk about the combine a little bit, and we'll head right into free agency, because I think that's where everybody wants to discuss and talk about what's going on right now. So this week, we saw the Seattle Seahawks make a couple of moves as far as what they didn't do. And they did not assign tenders for both Deshaun Shedd and Coyle. And I was just wondering what your thoughts on Shedd was, more or less. It looks like they may have moved on from Coyle with that move, but Shedd not necessarily so.
Yeah, I mean, with Coyle, it's a matter of looking at the value, and you're not going to pay a backup linebacker that's replaceable $2 million a year, because that's what the lowest level tender is for there, and so it just wasn't a value. That doesn't mean he won't come back. And the same is true for Shedd. Now, Shedd's a different story because he's a starting caliber player, and so you're looking at, okay, if they had given him it's like $1.9 million to bring him back, and you think, okay, that could be worth it. The issue there with him is he had that knee injury. He is a long way out still. The team's operating under the assumption that he may not be back for the beginning of the season, start the year on the physically unable to perform list, not be back till midseason. And with that, they don't really want to lock him up with that one-year deal at that cap value. And they're not real concerned about losing him this offseason, because any team that signs him is going to want him to pass a physical, and this close to his knee surgery, he can't pass a physical. So they can slow pay, play the contract situation a little bit and see how it comes up.
Sure. Well, and all these moves are kind of hooked together. I mean, we look at these initial tender offers. We look at the free agency period where we're kind of re-signing as some of our own guys, in fact more of our own guys than not, probably at the end of the day. And so what they're trying to do between now and the draft is pretty much plug as many holes as they can. And if Coyle doesn't fit that long-term look, maybe this is a time to move on. Like you said, they could bring him back for a little less going forward. But he is fairly serviceable, and if you did not bring him back, you'd have to plug that hole with somebody. Now, whether that's the draft or a unrestricted or undrafted free agent later on after the draft, or a really fairly low-profile free agent signing, maybe next week, week after. What are your thoughts on the linebacker situation?
Well, I think they'll probably attack it in a couple of ways. They'll sign whether it be him or some other linebacker that's been mostly a backup for their career, get him in on a one-year vet minimum contract, and then at the same time look during the draft, either during it on day three or just after in the undrafted period, and to grab a couple of options and then let the two or three guys compete for that spot.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think we'll see Shedd back. I really believe that they don't think that he's going to be ready at the first of the year. Mm-hmm. They also don't want to pay him the tender salary that he was going to have to come in at. And I think, moving forward into the draft, I really do believe that they're probably going to end up drafting at least a couple of corners, maybe one early, one mid to late rounds, to give them some depth.
Yeah, and this is a great year to need a cornerback. And we saw that in the combine where, the offensive line group was terrible at the combine, and the defensive back group was, I mean, this is one of the most athletic defensive back groups that we've ever seen at the combine. And so you look at the, you know, there are these guys that are 6'2", 6'3", that you normally are rare, and when they come through, they're tall, but they're stiff and they don't do well. And they're just, you know, jumping out of the building and just looking outstanding. And so you end up with this really good group. And so the Seahawks will be able to kind of wait a little bit and, you know, not have to panic at cornerback and still get a good player or two.
Well, and you're right. And a great segue into our next segment, which is the combine. We're going to do a little review. The Seahawks are set up pretty well this year as far as matching player need with the strength of the draft, which is defensive backs in particular, safeties, linebacker. There's a couple other positions on offense. I think tight end is pretty strong. Looks like running backs are not special, but pretty decent into the mid rounds. Quarterbacks, obviously not good, but we're not looking for one. So why don't we talk about a couple of combine winners for you in particular that stood out?
Definitely Kevin King from University of Washington. The guy just showed up and blew everything away, like 99.5 percentile as far as athletes at corner, 6'3", just really showed off his athleticism. To me, that he was a guy who people were talking about in, you know, mid to late third round, and now after the combine, there's some late first round talk, and there's a lot of connection of him to Seattle. So
is that realistic, you know, for a guy to move that much out of a combine performance when you've got all that film to look at? You know, he was pretty healthy going in to the combine throughout his career at the University of Washington. Does a guy like that really move that fast and that far?
Yes, but it's less about the combine and more about guys finally taking notice. I mean, there's so many players and so little time to study them all that there's a little bit of, you know, rounding error in all of this. And so he's a guy who never generated a lot of hype, and so therefore he's kind of graded down. Because you're just like, oh, he's not as good as Buda Baker. I mean, Baker was the name in that secondary, and Sid Jones was a little bit also more of a name, and so those guys were rated higher.
Is some of that, and I know the guys you just mentioned are on the same team, but is some of this lack of notice, if you will, kind of a West Coast Pac-12 sort of bias out there where, you know, you've got these pretty decent players, but if they were in the SEC or the East Coast, they'd get a lot more hype.
Especially defensive players in the Pac-12, and that's pretty common. If they were, if they were the SEC, or if they were a, Big Ten player, they would have a lot more hype, and people would know them, and people would be talking about them going higher in the draft, and that's why you see those players move more after the combine, because when they come in and really impress, then everyone goes, oh, wait, let's go back and relook at their tape for real. And, you know, King's tape it's not third or fourth round where people thought. It's probably late two, but then you throw in his athleticism, they go, okay, well, he might be late two, but the ceiling is really high, so let's go ahead and say early two with him, because it'll take him a little bit longer to develop, but it's worth waiting for because he's got such athleticism. And that's really where, with King, like where he's at.
Now, with how he might relate to the Seahawks, he does have the length, size, and speed that they look for. And does his athletic profile, his performance in the combine, all his tape point to the idea that he could be a value pick at 26, or would that indicate if they really want him that he might be available later in the first or early second, and the Seahawks would look to trade down knowing that he might be out there?
So he does project very well into Seattle's scheme. I think my comment was he's the closest thing to Richard Sherman since Richard Sherman athletically. So that'll give you kind of an idea, you know, the height, weight, just all of his agility numbers. So I think if the Seahawks want him, they're going to have to take him. What they'll probably do is just wait and see how the draft unfolds. When they're sitting there at 26, if him and Witherspoon out of Colorado are both available, they're very similar athletes, very similar players, both 6'3", then they'll trade back maybe to, 30 or 29, somewhere in there, get an extra pick, and then take whoever's left. If one of them is gone and the other one's there, they're going to be more pressured to sit and at that spot and take one of them.
Well, as you know, Schneider usually talks about having a shelf of value, where certain value drops and rises and stays fairly consistent. And it is possible that Schneider takes a look at picks between 25 and 40 and says, you know what? We'd be happy with almost any number of players within that range. Can we get an extra pick or two if we were to drop back 5-10 picks at the most, probably, get another third rounder or maybe another fourth and fifth type situation, and still have four or five guys they really like that they could get at say 32 to 38.
Yeah. And that is definitely Schneider's way of doing things. And it's a smart way of doing things because, you know, unless there's a guy who you absolutely love, or if you're sitting right at the back end of the one of those shelves where, all those guys that you thought were going to be in that range are gone and you're looking at one or two left, you're better off to trade back. And we're just looking at cornerbacks, there is that group. I mentioned King and Witherspoon. You could throw in Marlon Humphrey out of Alabama. You can talk about Sid Jones, also from Washington.
How about a guy that I really thought popped was Melifuanu?
So he's a guy that is a little bit different. Is a safety. He's a good, free safety with just incredible athleticism, just absolutely crazy. But his tape is not. It is not up to par. I mean, there's a lot of mistakes.
Quote unquote soft.
Yeah,
I heard that about him.
Yep, and he overruns plays a lot. He doesn't show the great instincts of an Earl Thomas or, you know, some of the NFL safety. So you're picking a super athletic project.
Speaking of athletic, I mean, 6'3", 224, 32.5-inch arms, 44-inch vertical jump. Love that position. 11.9 broad jump, which is jumping out of the building, and a 4.4 40. I mean, jeez. And so Eric Edholm reported that this is the player the Seahawks have spent the most time with so far in the Senior Bowl and in the combine interview process and just evaluating him. So it wouldn't shock me if he's definitely number one, number two, number three on their radar.
Oh, and it, just from the athletic profile standpoint, he totally would make just tremendous sense for the Seahawks. Like I said, I'm not real excited about his tape. I think he's more of a project, but he's a guy you bring in. I mean, Cam Chancellor, when they drafted him, was kind of similar. I mean, he's a little bigger, and he's also more of an in the box strong safety versus a free safety. So there's some differences, but if you look at, he was super athletic, massive project, fell all the way to the fifth round. Seattle grabbed him. They spent a year developing him with Lawyer Malloy as the starter, and then they got an all-pro. So he's kind of a guy that you can look at that way and see if, you know, maybe they can turn him into something. But I wouldn't be as excited about them grabbing him in the first round or early in the second after a trade down, just simply because I don't think he's ready to contribute right now.
Interesting. I don't know, man. That guy... Something about that guy, I just can't put my finger on it, but it would excite me if we pulled the trigger. I wouldn't have the same reservation.
Before I went through and looked at all of his tape, I had him pegged as my Cam Chancellor replacement, which you and I talked about back in the first one that we were, what would we do with Cam? And it, draft a replacement, develop him. And I had him pegged. He was going to be my guy. You get him. You have all those third round picks. You go get Minifanu and turn him into Cam. And after that combine, I'm not going to go away from that. I just think that they may have to draft him a little sooner than they'd like to get.
Well,
that
he did. Him. You know, he did have a 4-year career. Mm-hmm. He did have, you know, 349 tackles. He was productive. He was, an integral part of their scheme. Anyway, I think that he would be a good fit. Yeah, would I feel better if we could pick him up in the middle of the second round and gain a couple picks moving back a little bit? Sure. But I think that he would probably be an instant hit in the Seahawks scheme because they could move him around so much. I mean, he could play into the slot. He could play up. He could blitz from that safety position. He could cover, he's big enough to cover tight ends. We need the depth, big time. So
if they're going to draft, a safety in that range, I'd rather see him draft Buda Baker out of Washington. He's not big. He's smaller, but he can flat out cover in the slot. He can play the back end, in more of an Earl Thomas role. He's also versatile, but he's versatile in different ways.
Yes.
And I think that you're going to get a guy who is less risky in terms of, the bust potential with him than Metafano.
I totally can see that as well. I mean, Buda Baker would be an amazing pick, and it would certainly give Thomas some time to take some plays off now and again too. I mean, he's legitimately a guy that could probably come in and start for most teams.
Yep.
So, yep.
I was going to say, people, our listeners will know that all of this Husky talk is not homerism on my part, because I'm a Coug. And so when I start praising guys like Baker and King, it's because they are legit great players, our prospects that are guys that are going to do well at the next level. So
is there one or two other guys that popped out for you, or any players that you thought really hurt themselves at the combine?
So Dalvin Cook, the running back, was kind of the consensus top running back, had an absolutely terrible week at the combine. I mean, he did not perform in any of the drills. It looked, very unathletic, and everyone's like, whoa, what happened there? And so then I've actually seen some people going back, look at the tape, and go, he rounds off his runs. He doesn't make sharp cuts, and so that's how he's able to keep his speed, because he doesn't have the explosion. And so people are starting to really look back and go, I think we overrated him.
Interesting.
Yeah, so he's a guy who didn't do himself any favors. And pretty much the entire offensive line group didn't do themselves any favors. You've got both the guys from USC, which are Wheeler and Banner. They both tested below the fifth percentile athletically, which is bad. You only had five players there test above average as compared to NFL peers. Only five guys. Two of them
Isn't
were
that
just
crazy.
Two of them were just barely above average, like they were in like 52 and 55th percentile.
So that kind of tells me, Keith, that this may be a year where you can see Seattle using another seventh round pick or an undrafted guy to come in as a defensive guy that gets project into the offensive line.
Yeah, you're going to see them. If they're going to look for a project, it's going to be probably a defensive player or another basketball player or something like that. And I know everyone is going to hate it, and yeah, I'm not going to like covering it, but there just isn't a lot of athletes on the offensive line this year. So they're not really going to have a lot of options.
Quickly, if you could name one player out of that combine that is going to be a Seattle Seahawk, who would that be?
Player that is going to be a Seattle Seahawk. I was focusing so much on the defensive backs, and I really want to say King. But at the same point, I don't know where they value that. So I'm going to go with an offensive tackle. And his first name is escaping me, but his last name is Moton, M-O-T-O-N.
Right.
And he's from this little tiny school that most people probably haven't heard of. And I looked at his tape. It's pretty good. He's got some good movement skills. He's one of those...
Western Michigan.
There you go. And he's one of those few guys that's an above average athlete for the position. You know, he's been playing at a small school, so he's a bit of a project and has some technique work that needs to be fixed.
Is he a second round, third round guy?
Where do you have him pegged? I have him in the late three, so he's going to be down in that comp pick area where the Seahawks have all those extra third round picks. And I think he's a guy, he's not a guy you're going to bring in to start year one, but he has all the athleticism of like a Gary Gilliam, but with actual experience on the offensive line and, you know, it much less of a project than Gilliam ever was.
Well, that gives us a guy to take a look at and keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So good. So I think without further ado, let's just jump right into free agency because right off the bat, we have news to talk about. Exactly. Right off the bat, the Seahawks made a move in the first couple minutes of free agency after the tampering period, quote unquote, it was over. Legitimate free agency started at 1 p.m. on Thursday Pacific time. And what did Seattle do?
The Seahawks signed the number two overall pick in the 2013 draft, Luke Jokel, who spent the last 4 years as a disappointment in Jacksonville. They signed him to a one-year incentive-laden deal that's below market value for, you know, any of the other signings that were going in there, just to give him a chance to rebuild his market value. And it's, you know, one of those upside signings for the Seahawks.
I think it is upside, and my gut instinct wants to take a positive outlook on this move. And he's a Texas A&M guy. I think Ifedi's a Texas A&M guy. I think that Cable likes Texas A&M guys because they kind of run a zone scheme out of there. So they've got a little bit of that experience. I think he believes, and this is, again, one of those Cable things where he can fix anybody. And I think that he's going to take a look at Luke, and he's going to see an athlete, and he's going to see a guy that he thinks he can swing around that line in a couple, two, three different positions. And I think he's thinking he's got a player.
It's hard to project this because we don't know what else the team is going to do in free agency in the draft, but he is a guy that is versatile. He can play guard or tackle. He's played right tackle, left guard, and left tackle in the NFL.
Is he an upgrade?
Yes.
From what we have. I mean, bottom line, did we improve our team?
We improved that offensive tackle if that's where he lands. Of course, that is a really, really low bar to get over. To say that it was an improvement. So
what kind of contract did it take to get him in the building?
So we don't know the full details. It's a 1 year up to $8 million. But what we don't know is how much of that is base salary. And then what we do know is that it's really incentive rich, but we don't know what those incentives are.
You want to take a guess?
I think that we're looking at about $3 million in base salary, and then the rest is incentives. And then it comes down to, okay, if there's playing time incentives, okay, that counts as
likely
to be achieved, and so therefore it affects the cap until he doesn't meet them, and then they get the refund of the cap space. If their team incentives, like making the playoffs, making the Super Bowl, that kind of stuff, then, you know, those count in the same way. If they are ones like make it to a Pro Bowl or that kind of stuff, those count as not likely to be achieved, and so therefore they don't count against the cap until the player meets them, and then they would.
So a total number that's possibly against the cap for him would be in the $6 million range-ish?
Yeah.
Give or take?
Six to seven, I think, is probably what his cap number is going to be at the start of the year, and by the end of the year when he doesn't meet incentives, we'll see that number drop back down.
You know what? I'd pay him $8 million if he can meet all the incentives, because
exactly,
I want him to be successful.
Yeah.
You know, and if he is successful, quite honestly, and he turns his career around and the Seahawks decide that they can't afford him next year, he goes out and signs a big contract, we could end up with a real nice comp pick for him. So all around, I think I'm okay with the move.
Yeah, the better he plays, the better it is for the Seahawks. And if they have to pay him an extra couple million dollars because he hits incentives along the way, then I don't think anyone will complain because that meant he played really well. And what they need is a guy who can play well. So, yeah, that's one of the nice things here is well, they'll pay him whatever he earns at this point. But it is nice to see that it is incentive-based because if that knee that he injured last year after only four games gives him some trouble and he doesn't get all the way back and he doesn't play, okay, well then they didn't spend $8 million on an experiment that didn't work. They can, you know, he doesn't meet those incentives and everything goes back and they get their caps money back for the following year when they're going to need it.
So the Seahawks have made a move. And so now at least all of us who've been clamoring for offensive line talent infusion have at least a warm body that we can put into place and feel a little bit better about it. But it doesn't look like the Seahawks are completely done yet. What else is going on? Let's stick with offensive linemen. What else are you hearing?
So the other thing which is happening is TJ Lang, who's the veteran offensive guard from Green Bay. He is, looking at the clock, not in town as of the point that we are recording this, but he will be shortly. His plane lands soon, and he'll be in town tonight. Meeting with the Seahawks and hopefully them getting him signed, although he has other trips lined up.
Can we afford TJ Lang? And oh, what yeah. would he do for the Seahawks if we did get him in the building and didn't let him leave it without a contract?
The team can afford him. They went into this offseason with enough cap space to make a big signing and Jugal doesn't count.
The market is just crazy right now guards and tackles and even guys that are kind of not even top 10 at the position are getting some big bucks. What makes him semi-affordable? What makes him a good fit? Where do you think he's going to land as far as a contract is concerned?
I think he'll land in the 10 to 12 million per year range, but not all of that's going to be in the first year. The way the NFL contracts work out is because a chunk of it is in signing bonus, and that counts when teams structure deals. They go, okay, well, if we're going to pay you $10 million a year for this first year, it's going to be $6 million of a signing bonus, and then $4 million of salary, and so then that signing bonus chunk gets spread out all over all the years, and so the actual cash there's $10 million, but the cap number will come in less, and I think that's why they're going to be able to fit him in without a lot of difficulty. Where it will become a problem is next year or the year after, because then that number goes up, and so it can be okay. Well, we can. If we sign him, then we're going to have more difficulty signing Justin Britt. So maybe instead of signing Justin Britt this offseason, we have to wait till, you know, December and do things
or Cam Chancellor.
Yeah, or Cam. So these are guys that maybe won't get signed this offseason, and they wait till midseason so that things kind of push back a year as far as where the salary cap implications are. So that's where you're going to see there's some finagling that they might have to do that way, but they can fit him in under the cap without a lot of difficulty.
It does sound like they're going to throw everything at him to get him to sign. It remains to be seen whether or not they're successful at it. You know, there have been occasions in the past where prime free agents have come in, and we've done that, and they've left with full negotiating strength back to their original teams to re-up. So what are the chances of him actually being a Seattle Seahawk?
That's a good question. Right now, I'd say pretty good, because the Seahawks seem to really want him. They know they need him. They know that getting a veteran into that meeting room and onto the field is absolutely something that they need to do. I mean, you look at both Pete Carroll and John Snyder mentioned it in their combine press conferences about they got too young, too fast. They need to bring That's in right. some veteran leadership. And I think they've seemed to have narrowed in on TJ Lang as that guy. That's going to be that veteran leadership. So right now I'd say the odds are pretty good. If we don't have a deal this evening, Today's Friday, by like 8 o'clock local time here, I think the odds drop tremendously, because if he leaves, he'll go somewhere else, and someone else will pay him what Seattle wasn't willing to. So right now it feels good, but it needs to happen today.
So let's assume that it happens. Can you run out the offensive line, and including Jokel, and kind of guide us through the improvement that we would see?
Well, you know, let's go from the inside out, because I think it works easier that way. You're still going to see Glowinski and Britt in the center of that line. You're going to slot TJ Lang in at right, a guard, and it gives them a very solid center for the line, which is important for Russell Wilson, because he's not the tallest guy. And so, as you see when you look at the Saints with Drew Brees, they've invested more at guard than teams usually would, because they know what they've got to do, they've got to work with there.
That's a very good point.
So giving the Seahawks that three interior linemen would be great. And then it sets up, okay, so now go back to offensive tackle, and you go, okay, last year that was a major problem, and this year you would go in as a question mark. But instead of having these guys, that have never played, and you're like, hey, you're our starter, now they're competing. So you've got Jokel and Fant on one side, you've got Reese and Ifedi and Gilliam all on the other side. And so you've got, you know, those five guys, and you're like, compete. We're going to play the best two. And I think you open up in that situation where you're looking for two out of five that need to step up and show they can play.
And maybe a guy they draft.
Yeah. And so you've got a situation like that where you're playing the odds in a way where, yeah, there might be some uncertainty, but it's still the odds are set up in a way where you feel confident that you're going to be okay.
So left to right, you could look at Jokel, Glowinski, Britt, Lang, Ifedi, if they move Ifedi out of the right tackle spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's I could live with that line.
Or Reese Adiambo.
Or Reese.
So yeah. So
do you think Ifedi is literally going to work himself out of a job?
No, I don't. I think that if they sign Lang, they'll move Ifedi to right tackle, and they're going to give him every chance to win that job. And it'll be up to him. But I think he'll go into training camp as the starter at right tackle. It'll be up to him to keep it and to stop Adiambo and Gilliam from taking that job away from him.
You know what? I think that if they did Lang, it would make my offseason, because everything else, I think, then becomes easier for the Seahawks to solve. You know, if they can solve this offensive line issue, I think that they don't have to depend on the draft, which is horrible for offensive linemen this year. I think they can then focus on the defense, you know, maybe a tight end on the offense. But other than that, I mean, there's really not a lot of big holes on the offense, maybe another running back. And then you shift over to that defense, and you can focus all of your attention there, which I think we need to do. And it I don't know, it just makes it easier for me.
I don't see them spending a lot of free agent capital on the defense, but I do.
I don't either.
I do see them investing heavily in it in the draft, and getting younger, especially in the backup spots, just getting younger and more athletic on the defensive line. You know, a couple of extra linebackers, and then, as we've been talking about, you know, and the defensive back, both safety and corner. I see them investing heavily in getting younger and more athletic on defense, and really getting back to the way they were a few years ago.
If Lang leaves the building without a contract, are there any other linemen on your radar that the Seahawks could bring in to at least drive some competition?
Yes.
Like a Schwenke or, you know.
Yeah, there are a few. I think at this point you're not looking at guys that are going to come in and start, because those guys are gone. Like all of them, the guys we were looking at, like Riley Reiff, who's not a great player, he's an average player. He signed, Ricky Wagner is signed, Zeitler is signed. I mean, all of these players that we are we're looking at as possibilities, they've all gone elsewhere. We're really looking at TJ Lang being the last available starter unless someone else gets cut. Schwenke's a good example. I think he can still come in and play, but he's more naturally a center. And if that's the case, then what do? Are you moving Britt over to guard?
I don't think you can move Britt. I really don't. I mean, that guy solidified himself as the center, and if you move, I wouldn't feel comfortable with that.
Yeah. See, and that is kind of where I'm at too. Is so, because if you're bringing in a center, if you're bringing in Schwenke, then you really are saying, okay, we're going to move Britt. Britt's going to be our left guard instead of TJ Lang, and going through that whole scenario that we just had.
Schwenke has experience at guard too, so
he does, but he's not built for it.
He's kind of like the Britt situation where mm-hmm. he didn't really find himself at guard and ended up playing center and played a little better. And I don't know. I'm with you. I mean, it's almost like we're held hostage by this whole TJ Lang thing. And we've got to throw the kitchen sink at him. And if we don't, and even if we do, and he says no, we're not sitting.
Yeah, yet. because then the upside play, the guy you're not going to count on, but you're hoping to get something from in Jokel, that becomes your big free agent addition on the offensive line. You got to have more than that. This unit needs more than that.
I just, you know, it's hard for me to imagine a team like the Seahawks, perennial playoff team, Super Bowl two times in the last 4 or 5 years. Pete Carroll, the coach, Snyder's the GM, to swing and miss on the offensive line as much as they have and then make this big splash for Lang and miss, that would be a tough one.
Yeah, it's weird that this is such a blind spot for the team because they have they've just struggled to find talent, and they keep drafting these offensive tackles that can't contribute at offensive tackle. I mean, you have Carpenter who ended up at guard. You've got Britt who ended up at center. You've got Ifedi who's now at guard.
Well, and when you draft that late in the draft, you're not getting the top one or two or three tackles in the draft. And so usually those are the guys that can come in and start for you right away. The other guys are more project guys that, yeah, they've got, you know, peripheral first round talent, but not really.
Well, yes and no, because the problem isn't that, okay, they're not ready to start. I mean, that's what, when you look at, like, Reece Adhiambo, you knew he wasn't ready because of the injuries and stuff. He was going to be a project. It was going to take time. But he at least had the physical talent, when healthy, to play offensive tackle. The Seahawks have this thing about drafting heavy-footed, slow guys that might be powerful in the run game, but just have no business pass blocking at offensive tackle. And that's who they keep drafting, and they keep drafting the same prototype of player that isn't built to succeed at the NFL level. And that's who Ifedi is, and that's who Carpenter was, and that's who Britt is. And it just hasn't worked, and they haven't adapted and figured out, hey, we need to look for something different.
So moving beyond the offensive line, any other position groups, any other players in the in free agency that you've had your eye on that might be a good fit for the Seahawks?
Well, the Seahawks are hitting the running back market very strongly here in the early stages. They haven't signed anyone, but they were tied with Adrian Peterson at one point, and then it turned out the Seahawks maybe weren't as interested once the numbers were exchanged. Then Jamaal Charles became the primary target, and now he seems they've kind of backed off on him a little bit. But they're bringing in the former Packer, Eddie Lacy. He'll be in tonight and tomorrow for a visit. And the former Raider, Latavius Murray, is also going to be in tomorrow. So that's a good group. Those are probably the four best running backs on the market, and all four of them the Seahawks are showing interest in it. So it's pretty clear that the Seahawks believe that they need a veteran in that running back room, you know, someone to add to the mix that isn't another rookie that they're going to draft. They want someone who has some experience and is a proven quantity.
What's your best fit and why?
Eddie Lacy, provided that his weight is under control and there's a weight clause in the contract, because he is a powerful runner that's hard to tackle. He is got some miles left on him. I think as long as he comes in shape and motivated, he's a guy you can plug in and start and be good.
I always looked at him, and I always looked at Marshawn. It was almost like a mirror image. When he was good, he was really good. And he beat up the Seahawks a couple of different times.
Yeah, he did.
And I'd like him, but boy, there's some question marks there. But you know what? There's question marks all across the board. We're not looking for a guy necessarily that has to be the primary back at this point. Any of those guys you mentioned would be coming in to fill a role on the Seahawks, would probably look at anywhere between 5 to at the most 10 touches a game. What do you think?
Well, I think that is what our expectation is and what the Seahawks' expectation is, but that isn't necessarily what the player's expectation is. Adrian Peterson still wants to be the guy and get 20 to 25 touches a game. And, you know, from what we saw last year, he shouldn't be getting that. I mean, we're talking about a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the best ever, but we have to remember that it is not he is not that same guy that he used to be. So
do you know where Charles is at as far as injury recovery, and is he ready to go?
I don't know where he is as far as his recovery. I haven't looked into that nearly as much as I probably should. He's another guy who when he's healthy and when he's on, he's really good. But the injuries over the last couple of years have, really built up and really slowed him down. And so it's very questionable as far as what does he have left in the tank.
So let's talk about the one guy that hasn't been injured, Murray from Oakland. What's his deal?
So Murray is he's got some quicks, and he's a bigger guy with some straight line speed.
Ran like a, what, 4.4?
I think it was
at the combine.
It was something like that. It was like 4.43. I'm just off the top of my head. I thought that could be wrong.
But he's a big guy.
He's a big guy with straight line speed. What he isn't is he's not particularly agile. He's not going to make a lot of guys miss. But he will if he gets to the corner, he could be gone. He's a big play threat. He's not Marshawn like, because when you see Marshawn run, he was always, he'd cut 8 times in a single run. And you're not going to get that from Murray, but what you wouldn't have gotten from Marshawn that you would for Murray is, once he gets in the clear, he can take it to the house by running away from people, because he's got that speed. So he's a different kind of player. He's got good hands out of the backfield. He is good that way. He's not the best pass blocker, but he'd be a first and second down back. He's not really the third down back. You're going to have Procise and then Alex Collins for that role. So, yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's an interesting fit. Now, whether or not he will excel in Seattle's scheme is a little harder to project because of the fact that we don't know what Seattle's offensive line is going to look like. Murray was very productive in Oakland, but a lot of the reason why he was productive in Oakland was because they had a very good offensive line, and so there were holes for him. Is he a guy who can be dodging people in the backfield and then still get up and turn nothing into something? We don't really know, because he wasn't really tested in that way when he was in Oakland.
Well, it doesn't seem to me that the Seahawks would invite him in if they didn't think so.
I don't know. I don't believe Adrian Peterson is that player anymore. And
Adrian Peterson isn't invited into the Seahawks.
Oh, that's true. Office, they talked with, or there was quote unquote mutual interest, which means they were talking with him. But you're right; they're not inviting him in for a visit. So, yeah, like I said, we'll have to see how that plays out. But I think Murray's a good fit. My concern with him is just, I don't know if, I just don't know if he's a scheme fit. So we'll have to, we'll see.
The logical question is, do the Seahawks need a veteran running back this year because of the injury history of our own players? Do we need somebody that's dependable? I mean, and you look at a guy like Murray, at least you're getting that.
Yeah, and that's why the Jamaal Charles and Adrian Peterson interest made no sense to me, because the reason why you're bringing in a veteran is because of Thomas Rawls and CJ Procise's inability to stay healthy. And so you're wanting to bring someone in to kind of take the pressure off those two guys and carry the load, someone who you're able to depend on if those guys go down again. And Peterson and Charles aren't that. Neither one of them have been able to stay healthy in recent years. Murray is. Eddie Lacy was before last season. So I think that, and he's young enough that, you know, you could write it off as a one-time thing for as far as his injury. So I think that I think those two guys fit what Seattle wants a lot better.
I also think that we'll probably take a look at a running back either in the draft or undrafted free agent come in to add to the competition as well, as they do almost every year.
Yep.
So moving on to other position groups or other players, you know, guys like Terrell McLean have been associated with the Seahawks at defensive tackle. You know, he's a 2-sack guy, 7 QB hits. But he did start 15 games. He'd be a quality, you know, guy to bring in to add to that rotational mix on the inside. Anybody else?
You know, I haven't spent a lot of time looking at those because I didn't expect them to be in on those on any other positions other than the offensive line and running back in this first week of free agency, because the guys that are going to bring in at defensive tackle are going to be draft hedges. They're, you know, guys that are,
yes,
that will come in and on a 1-year deal with very little guaranteed money, because if they don't get the guy they want in the draft, or if they get the guy they want in the draft, but then they get hurt during training camp, then they've got a fallback. And so then, you know, those fallback options, they've got 2 or 3 weeks at least before they start signing those guys. So I actually am unprepared for the question you just asked.
Well, yeah, and you know what? It is true that we are really kind of focused on guys that really make the most sense. We are going to see value signings later on in free agency, as the Seahawks always do. They'll always sign, even if it's their own guys coming back. I think those count as well as free agent signings, and we'll see a number of those. They do have to fill out their roster. So, mm-hmm. And we do need depth at safety and defensive line and corner. I just don't know that we're going to go out and do those in free agency just because they just don't want to spend the money there. And the draft is so strong in those spots.
Yeah, the strength of the draft on the defensive side of the ball is going to allow the Seahawks to really slow play any of free agency that goes on there. They'll wait and see what's available, and they're not going to be pushed to do anything quickly.
I do think one other guy that they're going to look at, though, on their defensive line is Devin Taylor, a defensive tackle from Detroit last year. You know, he's young. He's like, I think he's 27 years old. He creates a push up the middle. He had 4.5 sacks last year, 10 QB hits. Can probably be had for like $3.5 million a year. I think that we need a guy like that. And the only reason, and you mentioned hedge, I think it's a hedge for us because I don't know how much draft capital we're going to throw at defensive tackle in the draft, especially a guy that can create pressure up the middle, which is, I think, the key component that we're missing that helps that defensive backfield out a little bit on our team. And I'm not sure.
I can actually see that fit because when I look at him, I see a guy who is not a starter. He's a guy that comes in pass rush situations and can create that push up the middle in very much like a Clinton McDonald kind of role. And the Seahawks have missed that, and that's what they need.
I agree. So I think that we're going to wrap it for now. I know that there was a last, I just want to mention real quick, there was a last minute signing I'd make you aware of. Ian Rappaport just reported that the Vikings are signing offensive tackle Mike Remmers to a 5-year, $30 million deal.
Yeah.
One more tackle off the market.
And he was one of those guys that you kind of look at and you go, it's not, he would be fun to have in Seattle, but he's not a great fit because of the zone blocking scheme. He doesn't really fit that well, but he was kind of a fallback if things fell apart for Seattle, and now he's off the market too.
Yep. So everyone that's listening, we've got another week of kind of urgent free agency signings going on, and then after that it kind of slows down a little bit. So next week we'll have probably another free agency review show, what we can expect going forward with some of our own players that have yet to be signed, where they might land if they come back to the team. And we'll kind of start to look towards the draft, which is, you know, the last week in April. And, you know, free agency really kind of helps clarify what the team is going to do in the draft. And so we'll have a lot more answers as we move forward. Do you have any questions this week?
The question that I have this week is, it's kind of similar to when we talked about last week when we were talking about Cam Chancellor, and that is, what do you do at middle linebacker? Is Bobby Wagner the long-term solution, or do the Seahawks have to begin thinking beyond him because of injury concerns? That came from Charles on Twitter.
Well, I think Charles, you know, Michael Wagner is the solution at middle linebacker until he's not. You know, it's a matter of when the body breaks down, and because of that, Bobby Wagner's an amazing player, but he gives everything that he's got on the field, and it's only a matter of time before that catches up to a player. It's just the way the National Football League works, and so I would imagine Bobby Wagner's probably got at least, you know, 3, 4, 5 more years in him. The question becomes, where does that value, like, where does his contract end up at versus where his productivity starts to drop off? And so sometimes guys like that stick around with those teams and they understand that their value is diminishing a little bit and their productivity is going down, and they will stay and take less. Other times those kind of guys feel like they could go out and get another contract. And sometimes teams like the Seahawks have to let those guys go because the return on investment no longer makes sense for them. So I'm not sure exactly when that window closes. It will close. I just don't know when.
Yeah, I think that question is a bit premature, because I don't see him slowing down at all. When he's out there playing, he is still, you know, an all pro. I mean, he is, with Kuechly's injury, Bobby Wagner takes over the mantle as the best middle linebacker in the NFL, and I don't see that ending in the next couple of years. So I think this might be a question for 2 years from now, but not right now.
Yep, I agree. So we're going to wrap it, I think, for now. And another week in the books. Any final thoughts?
Seattle, go get TJ Lang. Go make it happen.
Oh, my gosh. I agree.
It will matter so much on Sundays to have that veteran guard that they can depend on. Just go do it, Seahawks.
So you can find us, obviously, if you're listening to this podcast. You've found the 12th Man Rising website, and you're listening on that website. You can download it from there as well. Soon we will be on iTunes and a few other aggregator podcast sites. You can find us on Twitter. I am at NW Seahawk. My name is Bill Alvstead. You can find Keith Myers at Myers NFL. And you can also find the podcast at Hawks Playbook. So until next week, it was great catching up with you, and thanks for sharing all the information, and we'll see you next time, Keith.
All right, see you next week.
The Hawks Playbook podcast is brought to you by the Fansided Network and 12thmanrising.com. Find our podcast on the website or subscribe on iTunes. You can find both Bill and Keith on Twitter. Bill is at NW Seahawk, and Keith is at Myers NFL.